Showtime Sports presents Showtime Boxing with Eric Raskin and Kieran Mulvaney.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Showtime Boxing with Raskin and Mulvaney. I am Kieran Mulvaney and I am here as always with my co-host Eric Raskin, Pennsylvania resident Eric Raskin, I should emphasize. Yeah, Eric, I imagine you and your fellow Keystone Staters are feeling a part of history today, really, as it was your collective 20 electoral votes that resulted in Saturday being such a seismic day with confirmation that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris will be the next president and vice president of the United States, notwithstanding claims to the contrary made in press conferences and landscape company parking lots. But now look, I could be churlish and I could point out that being last or near last isn't necessarily best, and that a certain Green Mountain state and its three, count them, three electoral votes was first on the board on Tuesday evening, and that my county voted for the winning ticket by 69 to 29%. I could say all of that, but I won't. Let us focus instead on some of the true fighters and heroes in Pennsylvania who made this result possible and who indeed have garnered attention the world over. And in particular, I would like to ask, echoing the queries of some French news outlets, c'est quoi, Gritty?
Yes, that is an actual phrase that was uttered somewhere in France, which is about as good a sign as there could possibly be that things are getting a little closer to right in the world. I do thank Vermont, you know, for playing its part, though I guess I'll
got the ball rolling.
Got the ball rolling, although we should note that the number that was on TV screens throughout the weekend, 273, still would have reached 270 without your three. But yeah, I'm displaying a lot of Philadelphia pride in particular these days. Pennsylvania pride, but Philly pride in particular. I'm on Twitter arguing that the Eagles should be recognized as America's team. I have an open challenge out to all my enemies to fight my state's lieutenant governor. Not me. Fight him. Yeah. But yeah, nothing gives me more pleasure than seeing Gritty become an international phenomenon. Look, you can hate our sports teams and their obnoxious fans who reek of Yingling and hoagie breath, but you have to admire that Philly is home to the number one mascot in all of American sports and the number two mascot in all of American sports. I mean, the Philly fanatic held down that number one spot for decades, but I think Gritty might be passing him. I kind of want to call in Steve Kornacki to update us on the Fanatic versus Gritty vote on the big board and tell us about the ground Gritty just picked up in Allegheny County. Actually, if there's anyone outrating Gritty right now in nationwide popularity, it can only be Steve Kornacki. Oh,
seriously.
It's Kornacki, Gritty, Philly Fanatic, and Lieutenant Governor Fetterman. That's basically the new Mount Rushmore right there. Can you tell I'm in a good mood, Kieran? I'm not making a lot of sense, and I don't care. My gods are a tireless nerd in khakis and a hideous orange hockey mascot.
You know, I briefly thought to myself, hey, how come like Gritty's getting all the attention here and is everybody's, you know, fantasy for being the hero? Why isn't it the Fanatic? And then I thought about it and looked at the Fanatic again and I'm like, God bless him. Fine mascot. If you want an alley fight, you're sending in Gritty.
Absolutely. Gritty will give you a hard check into the boards. Fanatic, a light belly bump, it doesn't do the same thing. And by the way, thank you to Gritty for rebranding the color orange, which has had a rough 4 years.
There you go. Yes. Point. We actually do have some boxing to talk about this week, and we're really looking forward to welcoming a first-time guest, Calvin Ford, a.k.a. Coach Calvin, the trainer of Javonte Davis, who will break down how Javonte pulled off the knockout of the year against Leo Santa Cruz. And we'll ask him who he'd like to see Tank fight next. We'll also analyze this past weekend's fights. There weren't too many, but we'll have a look at them, including Devin Haney's points win over Uriorkis Gamboa. We'll look ahead briefly to Terence Crawford versus Kell Brook. But we're going to start this week where we usually finish, with the outside the ring news. And one particular piece of news that has stirred up a whole lot of attention and conversation, even in the midst of all the other broader news that was going on, as it involves the biggest star in possibly the whole sport, but certainly the biggest star in boxing in North America.
Yeah, Kieran, of course, is talking about Canelo Alvarez, whose manager slash trainer Eddie Reynoso released a statement on Friday declaring the middleweight champion to be a free agent, meaning the drama between Canelo, promoter Golden Boy, and streaming service DAZN, which famously signed him to a $365 million contract in 2018, is over. As we discussed on previous podcasts, there had been tension between Canelo and Oscar De La Hoya for a while. And since COVID-19 began impacting the boxing business, DAZN was trying to cut Canelo's pay. And so he started trying to exit the contract. He has now done that without having to endure a drawn-out legal battle. And while some might spend a lot of energy on what this means for DAZN or for Golden Boy, the meaningful story for fight fans is that Canelo can return to the ring before 2020 is over. And he plans to, as it has been widely reported that he's been talking to PBC and is close to announcing a December 19th fight at 168 pounds against Caleb Plant. Kieran has some unconfirmed information from a good source about what network will carry that fight. We expect something will be announced very soon. But until then, let's just talk about what this means for Canelo. Less importantly to everyone not named Canelo Alvarez or on his payroll, what might this mean financially? And more importantly, what does this mean boxing-wise? Is Canelo Triple G3 officially dead? And what do the next couple of years potentially look like for the Mexican superstar?
I mean, if you mean financially for Canelo, then, I mean, whatever happens, he's not going to get a deal for anything like as much money as DAZN threw at him.
Right.
No one apart from DAZN would ever have done anything like that. And it didn't take long, as you said, for DAZN to have buyer's remorse. But, you know, I'm sure Canelo is fully aware of that. I don't think that was the real issue for him. It was about professionalism. It was about promises being made and kept. It was about promises being made on his behalf without his being consulted.
Right.
It was about being able to fight. DAZN was, as we've discussed, nixing some perfectly good opponents for Canelo Alvarez on the, you know, which are perhaps reasonable on the grounds that they're not necessarily $30 million opponents. But in terms of reasonable guys to fight, he was getting turned down and he was getting frustrated about that. And from what I understand, Canelo actually may not have very many fights left in his body and he wants to fight. You know, perhaps if he'd had a strong relationship with his promoter, he could have worked out those issues with DAZN. But as we know, he felt deceived by the terms that Golden Boy had offered DAZN. He'd grown to strongly dislike Oscar De La Hoya. You do wonder what it means for DAZN. You also have to wonder how thrilled Golovkin is now with this situation, because yes, that they pay him a lot of money, but he joined DAZN specifically to try to get that third fight with Canelo. That, you know, Canelo had no idea that he was being backed into. So yeah, it pays him a lot of money, but Golovkin too, very much at the tail end of his career. And you have to figure that at least for now, a third Canelo fight is out the window. You know, it's hard to see after this that there could be some kind of arrangement if Golovkin remains tied up with DAZN that something could be made to happen. And Canelo has not expressed a great deal of enthusiasm for it in the first place, which is part of the reason why he's left the DAZN here. But
now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina. Yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You know, obviously, DAZN's freed up a lot of money now, so that's good for them. Although I don't know if they had to pay Canelo a certain amount to be out of this. I have no idea what the terms were of that. But they are now down their star attraction. And I believe that even Anthony Joshua's contract is up with him after his next fight. So I don't know. As we've talked about before, it feels as if DAZN is repositioning itself a little bit for more of a global market than a U.S. one. But right. We shall see about that. But what does it mean more importantly, right, for boxing and for Canelo? Well, for Canelo, it means the opportunity to fight. And so it's going to close some doors, obviously, including the Golovkin one, probably. But it does open others. Caleb Plant looks like a real possibility. You know, you look at who else might be on that similar side of the street. If Canelo really wanted to dare to be great and really, you know, he's shown that he's not afraid to take on bigger guys, there's maybe a David Benavidez in his future, perhaps a Charlo, perhaps two Charlos.
Right.
There are some really interesting possibilities depending on whether he wants to stick at 160 or at 168 or bounce between the two. But the best thing in the short term is that it means almost certainly that we are going to see, as you said, the sport's biggest attraction in action in 2020.
Yeah, that's the thing I'm coming back to here. You know, my great theoretical lament, which I voiced a time or two prior to this, is that Canelo turned 30 during the pandemic. He's in his prime, still for the most part getting better with every fight.
Yep.
And so this would just be a horrible time for him and for boxing fans for him to be losing a year or two of his career. So that's a great relief. That's a theme of this week for me, experiencing great relief. But it's a great relief that he will almost certainly fight in 2020 after all against a top of the line opponent, no less. And that we can then expect a couple of Canelo fights each year, probably for the next couple of years. Things can change, of course. The next deal, you know, things could sour. But for now, there's every reason to think this was just a brief interruption in Canelo's career. He basically lost one fight due to the pandemic, but so did almost everybody. And now he's back on track. Is he going to be making less money than DAZN was going to pay him? We both are assuming so for the non-blockbuster fights, but you know, if one blockbuster fight comes along, one fight that could do 2 million pay-per-views, as his fight with Floyd Mayweather did 7 years ago, that could be worth two or three DAZN fights. I like the Plant matchup a lot. My inclination is to favor Canelo, but please don't tell Caleb Plant that. but it's a very tough fight for Canelo if it gets finalized. You could do it on pay-per-view or make it a huge non-pay-per-view event. Either strategy has upside. And to just touch quickly on the stuff that shouldn't matter as much to boxing fans, you know, what does this mean for DAZN and for Golden Boy? I think it's probably a relief for DAZN. They were clearly struggling to pay Canelo his guarantees. This relieves some pressure. They still have plenty of good fighters and a solid schedule coming up. They can focus on that. For Golden Boy, there aren't as many silver linings, maybe not any silver linings. Oscar's top priority now becomes focusing on holding on to his up-and-comers, namely Ryan Garcia and Virgil Ortiz. But, you know, just in the big picture, this news has a lot of ramifications. I think most importantly, it's a fresh start for Canelo, and it's good news for his fans that he will be fighting one time in 2020, which is one time more than I was expecting as of a few days ago.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, talking about trying to hold on to the fighters, I mean, Golden Boy does keep shooting itself in the foot. You know, they listed a statement that said something to the effect of, yeah, we still got these great fighters like Ryan Garcia, like Virgil Ortiz, all of which prompted Jojo Diaz to tweet that, another guy who's been dissatisfied with Golden Boy. And obviously, of course, where Canelo goes, Ryan Garcia is going to want to go too. So that's going to be the next challenge for them. But
yeah.
But like you say, all of that as boxing fans should be of incidental concern.
Right.
And the important thing is the opportunity to see Canelo. It's been, what's it been now, a year? So we're overdue to see Canelo. And what a boost, actually, it will be for the sport to see him. And especially if he's in a good fight, because, you know, we talked about that at the beginning when boxing was coming back, how we just really needed to see the big guys come back. But if Canelo is the biggest star in North American boxing, our next news item involves one of the two biggest stars outside North America, the heavyweight champ Tyson Fury. So he's been, again, something we've touched on before. He's been talking for a few weeks about fighting December 5th in London. Now we have a likely opponent. Nothing is official yet, but it appears he'll be taking on Agit Kabayel. And if you're saying, ooh, you're not alone. He is 20-0. He's with 13 KOs. He's from Germany, 28 years old. But he does have one notable name on his record. He defeated Derek Chisora by majority decision in 2017. Eric, have you heard of this guy before this week? And how do you feel about it if he is Tyson Fury's opponent on December 5th?
So I guess I must have seen the name come across my radar when he beat Chisora, but it honestly didn't look familiar to me at all when I saw it again this week. Mm. But I watched some video of Kabayel, including parts of the Chisora fight, and he's not bad at all. To put it in terms of recent Fury opponents, this is much closer to an Otto Wallin than a Tom Schwartz. So considering that I was expecting Fury, if he was indeed fighting someone not named Deontay Wilder in London on December 5th, essentially keeping busy before an Anthony Joshua fight, I was expecting him to face either a Schwartz-type pushover or a fairly washed familiar name like a Bermaine Stiverne type. So given that, Kabayel's actually pretty good. This could be a real fight. If he's about 90% of Otto Wallin, that means Fury will have to work to beat him. The Chisora result was not a bad decision. Caballel legit beat him close. That tells you he's solid, just knowing that fact. And so, yeah, this is about as good as we could have expected in terms of matchmaking for December 5th. And could you imagine if Caballel upset the apple cart?
Oh, you know?
I don't think it's likely, but, oh, man, would that be a very boxing-y turn of events to get no Fury Wilder 3 and screw up Fury Joshua? It's a long shot, but Caballel is competent enough that I can't rule it out.
It would be a very boxing and 2020 co-promotion result.
There you go. The combined force of those two coming together, yeah. Speaking of things that have been very present in 2020, there's a lot of news this week with regard to COVID and its impact on scheduled fights. We're seeing numbers spiking like crazy. The number of NFL players and games impacted keeps going up, and same with boxing, where three fights were postponed this week due to positive tests. First, there was supposed to be a junior flyweight title fight in Osaka, Japan this past Tuesday, Hiroto Kayoguchi versus Thonongsak Seamstri. But after the weigh-in, Kayoguchi and his trainer both tested positive for COVID, so that fight got canceled. Then Alexander Povetkin tested positive for COVID-19. His rematch with Dillian White was scheduled for November 21st, but now there's talk of a target date of January 30th, 2021. And the biggest disappointment for serious boxing fans came when 130-pound titleist Miguel Burchelt tested positive, postponing his December 12th fight with Oscar Valdez, a bout we were all really looking forward to. Bob Arum is now talking about Shakur Stevenson headlining on that date against an opponent to be determined instead. Kieran, you said last week that the window to do fights in front of fans semi-safely in the U.S. was a small one. Davis Santa Cruz slipped in there. Safe to assume the COVID impact on boxing from this point forward will get worse before it gets better? And any other reactions to any of these specific instances and the fights that are getting pushed back?
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, April 26th on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Yeah, I mean, even since last week, it really feels even more as if that window is closing. Look, COVID is making its predicted winter surge. Just in the United States right now, we're back to 120,000 new cases and 1,000 deaths a day, which is just appalling. You know, we can see that sport can still be done properly as long as you do it. You know, the key is the bubble, right? It's absolutely that key. And from the outside, I have no fault at all with the way that ESPN and Top Rank and PBC and Showtime have done their sequence of fights. It seems to be exactly right. You know, you keep that tight bubble. Any issues, and then people just don't get to come in or are kicked out. It sucks for the people involved. You know, we've talked to a few of them, and it's clear that hotel room isolation is a tough one, but I don't know that there's any alternative. That's the way to get it done. You know, in terms of events in front of fans, we still have 70 or so days of an administration that's basically thrown its hands up in the air and decided that this thing doesn't exist. So it's hard to imagine there'll be any official guidance in this respect prior to mid-January. So it's going to be incumbent on promoters and broadcasters and commissions to make those determinations by themselves. It may be that it will still be deemed possible. You know, if you do exactly what happened at the Alamo Dome, maybe it still will be possible. If you have low capacity crowds that are socially distanced and everybody has to wear masks and that's enforced and there are temperature checks, maybe it's still possible to do that. But the situation globally, or certainly in North America and in Europe, is not getting better. And as we've mentioned, parts of Europe have gone back into a lockdown, and the notion of crowds being at events is absolutely not a thing that's happening, at least over the next month or so. And we will see what it means for crowds at events here. The other thing to add with regard to the fights that you mentioned, obviously, they were all good fights, especially Burchelt, but it's a shame to see them postponed, but there is no alternative. And I also, you know, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that these fighters who've tested positive are not just statistics, they're human beings. And while they're in very, very low risk categories because they're stupid fit and, and they're young, they're not at risk. So really hope that this is just a case of these guys testing positive and not having any symptoms and being perfectly healthy when they get through it. That's the most important thing, of course.
Yeah, and we absolutely do sort of lose sight of that in the moment when we see this news. We think about how it impacts boxing, but that really should be secondary. And just as far as the crowds at fights, you know, the timing of there are very few parts of the country where the weather is conducive to doing outdoor
also,
fights
yeah.
from now until March or April or so. Yeah, that doesn't help either.
Yeah, indeed. Here's news on a fight that we'd like to see, but that might be in jeopardy, but not because of COVID. It's because of a longer lasting and all the more pernicious issue in boxing. All roads appeared to be leading to Chocolatito Gonzalez against Juan Francisco Estrada 2. But on Wednesday, the name of Alphabet Body Redacted, because we don't want to give them publicity, ordered negotiations between Estrada and his mandatory Srisaketsu Rungvisai to begin. Now, that, frankly, is not a bad fight. Not only is it not a bad fight, it's a really good fight. How do we know that it's a really good fight? We've seen it twice already. They were both cracking bouts. But we've been waiting for Estrada Chocolatito 2 for 8+ years now. So, come on, people, just for once, get out of the damn way.
Yeah.
Eric, I know what the Alphabet Groups do to your blood pressure, and I know you've been super chill, and it's a wonderful weekend, and we don't necessarily want to spoil anything, but we got to touch this. So what's your level of Alphabet-induced rage on this one?
It's such a weird one, because I do feel some rage, some, why are you meddling? Sit the hell down and shut the hell up. But also, Estrada Srisaket 3 is a great fight. Their first two were both outstanding, so, you know, under any other circumstance, I'd be thrilled to see that fight. Maybe yeah. Estrada will pay step-aside money, but it's not like he makes huge money and it's easy
yeah.
for him to do that. This is such an obvious case for the redacted Alphabet Body to make an exception and say, your mandatory is due after one more fight. The people want to see Gonzalez
yes.
Estrada 2. Let's give the people what they want. Then we'll enforce your mandatory. If only giving the people what they want ever crossed the mind of any Alphabet Group officials. So on a scale of 1 to 10 of rage, I'm at like a 7, but the 7 is all about principle. I have rage over yeah. the violation of logic and principle. The actual act of ordering a really great mandatory fight isn't rage-inducing in a vacuum.
Right.
So we'll see where it goes. I would think if the bigger money is in a Chocolatito fight, then Estrada's people will find a way to make that happen.
But plus, if any fighter deserved a pass on mandatories, it's Juan Francisco Estrada. I mean,
yeah.
good Lord.
Yeah. He only fights elite opponents one after another after another. So, yeah. How could you object to Estrada Chocolatito 2 first? And if whoever wins that can go ahead and give Srisaket his mandate. Although now that I think about it, I'm not sure I want to see Chocolatito versus Srisaket
yeah.
a third time. But this is not the time to be forcing Estrada Srisaket 3. Let that happen after this one.
Indeed.
The last news item that we want to cover concerns trouble outside the ring for a couple of boxers. We start with reports that Gervonta Davis was involved in a hit-and-run accident in Baltimore early Thursday morning. There were reportedly no major injuries, fortunately. Gervonta's role is unclear, and there have been no charges or arrests, so we can't really say much more until we know if Davis was driving and directly involved. A situation we have more information on is the latest with Adrian Broner, who was jailed last Monday on contempt of court charges in Cuyahoga County, Ohio. He was ordered to pay more than $780,000 in damages and court costs stemming from a 2018 Cleveland nightclub incident. Broner testified a month ago that he couldn't pay it because he only had $13.65 in cash, but then he posted a video on Instagram showing himself with stacks of money, certainly totaling more than $13.65. Courtroom videos made their way around the internet this week showing Broner name-dropping his, quote, rich friends who send him money, including the aforementioned Gervonta Davis, Al Haymon, and our boss Steven Espinoza. I've run out of things to say about Adrian Broner. How about you, Kieran? Anything to comment on here?
Not really. I mean, look, you know, neither of us really know either of these guys, of course. So, you know, anything I have to offer is really just speculative. As I think we've said before, it does feel at times as if Davis is a two steps forward and one step back kind of guy. And maybe the two steps forward is sometimes generous. I think you and I both really root for him. And I wish he'd find a way to just keep going forward. But as you said, we don't know any details about this particular incident. Maybe it's nothing. So I'll sort of refrain from adding anything more there. And as for Broner, he's the same, but without the steps forward. I don't know, really. There just doesn't seem to be any progress or maturation with Adrian Broner. You know, as I think I've mentioned, possibly ad nauseum before, I shadowed him for a few days prior to his Vicente Escobedo fight, right before he truly broke out. And I came away with the impression that he was not at all a malevolent person, but a deeply, deeply immature one. He struck me as the class clown that never grew up. Mm. Always trying to impress and please, and really had nothing else to him. And I've seen nothing since to shake me of that. I really wish him no ill will. At this point, it just keeps on going for him, and I just really hope that he learns to get his shit together. But whether this means we'll see him fight in January as planned, I don't know. Don't know if it has any impact. He looked a little chunky in that courtroom video.
Yes,
so,
I noticed that.
I don't know about that, but mostly I just hope he gets his stuff. I hope, you know, I don't have ill will against anyone who can't seem to get their act together, but boy, oh boy, the evidence is beginning to stack up that that's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
All right. You know what? Let's stick with one of these two young boxers, but we'll transition into a more positive discussion about him. It has been a little over a week since Gervonta Davis defeated Leo Santa Cruz in San Antonio on Showtime pay-per-view. It's fair to say that whatever has happened since, on that night, things could not have gone much better for him. Not only did he score a decisive victory over a four-time world champion, but at the time that we're recording this, the video of the knockout that is pinned at the top of the Showtime Boxing Twitter account has been viewed, get this, 4.5 million times. Incredible. A great result for Gervonta, of course, and by extension, a great result for his team as well. And if you watch the All Access show, you will be aware that one member of that team in particular played a very important role, not just for Tank in the corner, but throughout his life. And we are thrilled to say that that man, Coach Calvin Ford, is with us now. Coach, thank you so much for joining us on the Showtime Boxing Podcast.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Hey, how y'all doing today?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm hanging in there. Out and about right now, and everybody just was talking about it was a great fight.
Yeah, and hopefully you're still soaking in the afterglow of that great win. And let's dive right into it. As Kieran and I discussed on our post-fight podcast the day after the fight, we noticed it became obvious in the very first round that Gervonta wanted to land that left uppercut. We'll ask you about the knockout in a moment. But first, I'm just curious about the game plan, Calvin. What did you see that led you to believe the left uppercut would be such an important punch? And was that indeed all by design, or did Gervonta see something during the fight?
If you go back and watch the Santa Cruz lean over when he fights. He leans in with his head. He comes in with his head a lot of times when he's fighting. If you go back and look at the tape, when he's throwing a lot of punches when a person is standing in front of him. So we just kept dialing in on it. Tank didn't know that's what we was working on, because normally I'll never tell him what I'm doing. I just get him in a ripper tip or just throwing the certain punches that I need him to throw. And if you look at Tank have different types of punches that he throws, but that uppercut is like money shot.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to, you know, hear you break down that knockout punch. You know, Tank tweeted the video, and he pointed out that he adapted, right? So Santa Cruz threw a straight right hand that landed, then one that Gervonta blocked, and then the third one, Gervonta slipped before throwing that uppercut. And what did you see there? And are people overly focused on that final punch and maybe not appreciating the sequence by Gervonta enough?
Well, we noticed that Santa Cruz was slowing down for some reason. I don't know if it's the weight that he put on or the type of training that he did. But you notice he was hitting Tank. He was catching Tank. But Tank already knew that if you hit me, I'm going to hit you right back with something. Mm. And it was like, you give me one, I'm going to see if you take mine. And it paid off.
Mm.
So up until the knockout, it was a close fight. All three judges had Tank up 3-2.
The judges had it close. It didn't seem close. A lot of punches Santa Cruz was throwing. It wasn't connecting.
Okay, that was part of what I was going to ask you, is whether your confidence in the corner was shaken at all, or if you felt through those first five rounds like you guys were in control.
I thought the first three rounds, Tank took the first three rounds without you know, like, he just went through it, because Santa Cruz was missing a lot.
Okay.
He was missing a lot in the first three rounds. If you go really look at it, Tank was flipping a lot of them punches that they was throwing at him.
Right. Yeah. I mean, certainly that's part of Leo's approach, is he throws a lot of punches. They don't all land. So you were happy with the defensive effort from Tank. Were there still things, though, that you didn't love at a Tank in that fight that you come away wanting to work on with him going forward?
No, because I know Tank defense is a little bit, but Santa Cruz was touching. That's why his eye was sitting up, because he kept his hand down at one point. So, but other than that, you know, just, you know, Tank just looked at it and seeing what he can take. And it was a good shot, actually. It was a good shot. Very good shot. He threw it just right and perfect.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's for sure. He looked to us. We talked about this after the fight. There's always talk about Javante's conditioning, but he looked like he was in great shape. He performed like he looked lean. He looked mean. Is 130 actually his best weight?
Yeah, 130 is his best weight. He can fight between 130 and 135, but we're campaigning at 130. But if the money situation is right, we'll take 135.
Okay. So you have no problem going back and forth between fights, like, depending on where the money is at?
135 is like, we should be able to make that without no problems, you know? See, he came in at 129. We just did that when he took his clothes off, to be sure, because he ain't going to get penalized for nothing.
Right.
Right. As Kieran said, he looked in great shape. As you just said, he made the weight without any problems. And, you know, we had Abner Mares on before the fight, and he speculated that the whole COVID situation could be a bit of a blessing in disguise for Gervonta, because people are in quarantine, life is kind of boring, you're staying in, it's easier to stay focused on the fight and stay disciplined. Is that what you found with Gervonta leading up to this fight?
Well, actually, he hit it right on the nose, to tell you the truth, because the quarantine was a mental factor for us, too, because it was something that we actually never went into, and all the rules and regulations that they put in, but it did work in our favor, because of he couldn't move around or anything. But again, kudos go out to Leo. I mean, not Leo. What's the name that you just spoke to?
Abner Mares. Yeah.
He said, Abner Mares. When they did the Showtime interview, we was watching him, and I was listening to what he said, how the fight was going to pan out. And he was right on the money with that.
Mm.
He was definitely on the money with that. So, again, we knew he was going to come in throwing a lot of punches and whatnot. And the thing was, just weather his storm, just make sure we just stay sharper than him, which he did.
Right.
So you mentioned you're happy to fight at 130, happy to fight at 135, depending what's out there. Is there one particular opponent that stands out to you as the dream fight for Gervonta?
Well, it was Romachenko. We thought that would have been our dream fight. So, you know, it is what it is, because everybody was pumping him up to be the man, you know, and that's what's the name said. You know, he stepped up to the cause, and I had him doing his thing against, when he stood in front of them type of guys that's, you know, hungry.
So does Lopez now potentially become the dream fight for Gervonta then, with Lomachenko having taken a loss?
Well, he got to get his numbers up, because, you know, he don't have a big fan base. You with me?
Right.
We don't have a big fan base and whatnot. And at the end of the day, it's about numbers, especially if you're trying to stay on pay-per-view.
Right. What about somebody like a Ryan Garcia, who's got a great sort of following,
great,
at least?
Yeah, that's great. That is a great one right there.
Okay, we like that.
and he's always poking that Tank all the time. You know what I'm saying? Ron Garcia. Yeah. he's a... I got Kenny Ellis with me, his other coach with me. He said, who's that guy? I said, Ron Garcia. He said, yeah, that's a good fight right there. And I like him because he's always poking at Tank. He's always poking at Tank. And he have a big following. You with
okay.
me? He have a great big following. So that's a good fight.
Okay.
That's
okay.
a good fight for him. Them two to make sense on pay-per-view.
Right.
Got you.
So one thing to keep an eye on with Gervonta, whoever he plans to fight next, is his maturation process as a person outside the ring. He, of course, had another mm-hmm. incident this week, and it just seems like he's always taking some steps forward and some steps backwards. And look, that's not unusual for a young man his age, but how are you mm-hmm. feeling about him in terms of turning a corner? Like, you know, you've taken a lot of troubled kids in Baltimore and turned them into men. You've seen this many times before. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like Gervonta is headed in the right direction?
Well, I still believe he's heading in the right direction. You know, again, I always tell people they do not gave, we don't have a manual of life. Mm. And a lot of things, people make decisions and do certain things and whatnot, you know, like this incident that everybody claimed that, you know, if that was out of his control and whatnot, he's just in the middle of it because his vehicle was in the wrong place at the wrong time, you know. So we're trying to deal with that situation right now. But other than that, you know, it's still growing pains. You know, it's still growing pains. I always reflect back on Floyd when he was young. He went through his Mike Tyson when he was young,
right.
you know. So Ali, his situation was different because of the time. You with me? So
right.
all fighters go through their trials and tribulations, but people don't reflect back on that. I do because I study history. You get what I'm saying? And I watch the conduct of all of them coming up to being great champions, you know. And a lot of this came to him at a real young age. And he's about to turn 26. That's when normally us at men, we really start looking at a life at that particular age.
Yeah.
So you do feel though, like he's headed in the right direction. It's just sort of, like you said, the growing pains a lot of us go through in our 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So it takes time, you know. Hopefully when he gets to the back end of his career, we look back and say, man, he turned out. I look at Floyd, you know, Floyd changed his whole situation around, you know. So when you look at it, it's part of growing. Everybody goes through that. It just when they find it, their time to actually come into their stuff.
Yeah.
And if some of these things that a person goes through, it's a lesson for them, you know,
right.
to make them a better person.
Right. Well, on that front, you mentioned Floyd. How helpful has it been for Gervonta having this guy who's been through all of this whispering in his ear? Is that really a key factor for Gervonta as a person?
I think it is because, again, Floyd has been in his corner, and he's been telling him things that some young fighters would never get to see, you know, on that level if they don't make it to that level. He feels as though Tank will make it to that level, and he has something to give. It's not always boxing with Tank and Floyd. It's, you know, things that he went through in life. To make his life better, you know, and the relationship between them two is strange, but it's good, you know. And Floyd is learning, like, okay, let him be the fighter, and let me be the promoter. I'm a promoter, but at the same time, I'm gonna be in his ear because it's business, and that's the part he has to learn. The three elements of Tank that we try to teach him: Gervonta, the family man; Tank, the boxer; Davis, the businessman. So these are things that he has to learn.
Got you.
You know, so he got the boxing part now because he's been doing it since he was little.
Right.
You know, now we just have to get the family side. He's doing that with the baby. The baby, he loves his daughter, you know.
Right.
Now it's the business side. He has to understand the business of boxing.
Got you. So we've asked a lot of questions about Gervonta. Let's finish with one about you. You made a strong impression on viewers on Showtime's All Access show. And have you had a chance to watch that show at all?
How would I say? I watched the first episode. It brought me to tears that, you know, everybody don't understand. It's real for us, the journey of actually getting where we at. And it's bigger than boxing for us here in Baltimore, because I'm trying to get on the platform where I can touch people to actually help me really do what I'm trying to do to help the kids of Baltimore, because they need a lot of guidance, and we have mentors, but they don't have the platform that I would like to put them on to actually cultivate their talents here in Baltimore.
That really came across, I thought, and we Eric and I talked about it on the podcast, that it just really came across of like that role that you were playing and the importance of it, not just with John Gervonta, but with the community as a whole. And obviously you're known for that in Baltimore, but have you noticed, like, with being on All Access, that now maybe more people around the country are really aware of you?
I feel like Flo is dead, like, sometimes. They want you, Gervonta, so can I take a picture? Can I get an autograph? And I never was used to that, you know. And I had to tell people thank you for supporting us, you know, and believing what we are trying to do with these kids.
Nice.
Right.
Nice.
Right. So it elevated your fame profile a bit. And now that you've been on the Showtime Boxing podcast, it's just
even bigger.
This is the proof that you've made it to the top.
Yeah. I would just say I sit down for years watching TV and watching everybody else doing their thing. And you know, you imagine yourself in that position. You know, this is crazy, you know, that it's actually happened to me in my life.
Right.
Wow, that's awesome, man. It is deserved, and it has been a real pleasure to talk to you. Congratulations again on the win. And
thank you again. I really appreciate y'all.
Thank you, and thanks so much for joining us on the Showtime Boxing Podcast.
I thank you.
Thanks,
all
Calvin.
The best.
All right, our thanks again to Coach Calvin. Boy, you really got him going by mentioning Ryan Garcia. And it was a different undefeated young lightweight and possible future Gervonta Davis opponent who was in the spotlight this past Saturday. Devin Haney headlined on DAZN against Yuriorkis Gamboa and boxed effectively, dominated the fight, but could not score a knockdown or a knockout, becoming the first fighter to beat Gamboa over the distance by scores of 118-109 and 120-107 twice. Terrence Crawford stopped Gamboa, Gervonta Davis stopped Gamboa, even Robinson Castellanos stopped Gamboa, but Haney couldn't hurt the 38-year-old Cuban. So are you rethinking just how blue chip a prospect Haney is off this, his second straight distance fight? Or does he still fit right in with Teofimo Lopez, Davis, Garcia, and we should be admiring his boxing skill rather than worrying about a possible lack of power?
So it is worth remembering that Yuriorkis Gamboa is a very good fighter. Yes, he's 38 years old, but yes, Crawford stopped him, but Gamboa gave him some rough moments in that fight. It took Tank until the last round to stop him.
Right.
I kind of just want to dwell on Gamboa a little bit, because I think I might have mentioned this before. I don't really understand what happened to Gamboa's career. He was this terrific featherweight, and then with Top Rank, who for some reason suddenly wanted to put him in with Brandon Rios at 140, which understandably caused resentment on his part. He sat out his contract there, then made the mistake of signing with 50 Cent, and then he's just become this high-quality opponent for guys bigger than him. And honestly, I feel like his career deserved better. But yeah. Anyway. But look, we just saw, as we talked about, Gervonta Davis annihilate Leo Santa Cruz. And as I said, yes, he battered Gamboa and dropped him a couple times. But he looked to be en route to a disappointing 12-round win over Gamboa until he stopped him in the final round. I just think Haney, for one thing, just may not be as far along as Davis or Lopez. You know, and different people get to different points at different ages. Maybe he won't get to that point. You know, last week when we were discussing possible Davis opponents, you know, we said we felt that Haney maybe just wasn't bringing enough to the table right now. And I think that really underlined it. I think, you know, Devin Haney is not going to be the next guy to fight Gervonta Davis after that. You know, honestly, I'll tell you what. I find Devin Haney a bit of a hard guy to get a handle on as a boxer, and I have done for a couple of years now. Like, he would put together a string of fights a bit like this that are really technically good but not very exciting. Then he'd put, like, back-to-back really good explosive performances, and you think, oh my god, he's great.
Right.
And then he gets back to this kind of performance again. I wonder, actually, if maybe this is just who he is. Maybe it will continue to change as he progresses more, but maybe he's just a very good boxer who just occasionally, with the right opponent, can be explosive and exciting to watch.
Right.
Like, he's one of those guys, if you're going to watch him, you should assume you're going to be there for 12 rounds. But you should probably make sure you've got your beer with you already so that you don't have to go to the fridge, because there's always a possibility that it explodes into something else. Maybe that's just who he is. I don't know at this point with Devin Haney.
Yeah, the fighter who flashed through my mind a bit watching this fight was Vernon Forrest. That maybe he's that sort of fighter where he's going to be a top guy. He's going to fit in just fine with the other top guys. But something about his style is going to leave you a little less enthused than some of the others. He's just workmanlike, talented, skilled, getting it done, but he's not going to give you the knockout of the year as frequently as Gervonta Davis. The fact that I'm currently more excited about Ryan Garcia than I am about Devin Haney, I couldn't have imagined that like 18 right. months ago, but right. they've sort of just flipped. So yeah, I mean, I still think, as it sounds like you do, Devin Haney has a very high ceiling. Yep. But I'm just, he's not quite delivering that excitement that we were hoping to see from him, and that all these other guys that his name is mixed in with are delivering.
Yeah, I know exactly. Two heavyweight fights to note from the weekend. On that Haney Gamboa card, Filip Hrgović stopped an overweight Rydell Booker in the fifth round and then promptly told him he was too old, which was just something. Good job, referee. And on Fox, Luis King Kong Ortiz, in his first fight since losing to Deontay Wilder in their rematch a year ago, stopped Alexander Flores with, we think, a body shot in just 46 seconds. Do either of these wins mean anything for either the veteran heavyweight contender or the rising prospect?
In this moment, I have decided this is your new catchphrase, Kieran, is whenever you see we are talking about a fight where you like the stoppage, I want you to assert Hrgović voice and say, good job, referee.
Good job, referee. And leave it at that.
Yeah.
Good. Yep.
Do either of these wins mean anything? Short answer, no. But it's good that they're staying active. Booker, we've seen him on Showtime since he came back from a very long prison stretch. He has some skills, but he's getting up there in years, and he was 10 pounds over his weight from the last time we saw him on Showtime, and for that fight, he was about 10 to 15 pounds over his best weight. He clearly didn't train hard for this and can no longer be taken seriously as a gatekeeper, so we really learned nothing about Hrgović, who moves to 12-0, 10 KOs, remains a prospect to watch, but I'm not sure I see a future elite heavyweight there. The Luis Ortiz fight is more interesting to discuss just because of how it ended. He landed a right to the body that didn't look all that forceful, but maybe it just landed in the perfect spot, or maybe, as Lennox Lewis noticed on the replay, maybe Ortiz's biceps inadvertently colliding with Flores's forehead knocked him loopy, or maybe Flores just wanted out and thought he'd found a good punch to play up, but it wasn't as convincing as he'd hoped. I don't know. Very weird. We learned nothing about King Kong Ortiz, but he's still a dangerous heavyweight, still belongs in the top 10, even at age 62. I don't know why people are making such a big deal about Mike Tyson coming back when Ortiz is 8 years older than him and still fighting at a world-class level.
And that's just his official age.
Right, right. He could be 162. I wouldn't rule it out. Not a huge weekend of fights awaiting us, but there is a clear unofficial main event of the week ahead as more or less the consensus number one pound-for-pound fighter, now that Lomachenko has lost, Terence Crawford defends his welterweight belt against Kell Brook on Saturday night at the MGM Grand Bubble in Las Vegas, televised on ESPN. We've generally been unenthusiastic about this matchup since it was signed, but I'd say it's not awful. It's just not what we might have hoped for, given that Crawford hasn't faced a live underdog in at least 3 or 4 years. Kieran, do you give Kell Brook any kind of a chance at all of winning, or do you at least expect him to have moments and be competitive?
It sounds terribly dismissive to say this of a quality boxer. And make no mistake, right? Kell Brook is a quality boxer, but I don't give him a chance really to, I mean, every fighter has a chance, but I really don't give him much of a chance at all in this fight. That's more of a reflection, honestly, on Terence Crawford than it is on Kell Brook. I do think he may very well have moments. We know that Crawford is a slow starter quite right. often. And Brook is still is skilled and strong and experienced and incredibly brave. I would not be at all surprised. You know, we saw him start well against Errol Spence. I would not be surprised if he starts well, and is up on points after a few rounds, but I don't think that Crawford will be troubled, but he's an awkward fighter the way he fights as well, Brooke. He's just not apart from his general skill, he can just be a difficult guy to fight. Unfortunately, the problem for Kell Brook is that, you know, I mentioned he's brave. He's a bit brave. He's been too brave for his own good. We ask our boxers to dare to be great. He dared to be too great. And he just has not been the same since he took that tremendous risk against Gennady Golovkin. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got that physical frailty, you know, especially around his orbital bones and so on. So I do suspect that I think Brook will give a good account of himself, but I don't think he'll look very close to winning. And then I suspect that Crawford will stop him late-ish, sort of around the third quarter of the fight, would be my guess.
Yeah.
Not to disrespect Brook completely or to look totally past this fight, but Bob Arum did say this week that after that Brook fight, he's confident, and this is Bob Arum talking, he's confident that Crawford will fight either Errol Spence or Manny Pacquiao in the first half of 2021. Do you expect that statement will come true, Eric?
Well, it's interesting because it's two very different statements in one. One of them is we're going to make arguably the number one fight to be made in all of boxing. And one of them is we're going to make the most high profile, sad mismatch to be made in all of boxing. And maybe that's a stretch. Maybe Crawford Pacquiao isn't quite a full on mismatch, but it's at least in that realm. It's a guy in his prime versus a living legend 10 years past his absolute prime. Mm-hmm. And it's a great fight for making Terrence Crawford a bigger star, but it's not actually a great fight, I wouldn't expect. Whereas Crawford Spence, that's the one every hardcore fight fan wants to see, even if maybe Crawford Pacquiao sells more on pay-per-view. It's just a little, there's something off. Arum basically promising, in 2021, we will give you either a Beatles reunion tour or a Poison reunion tour. You're getting one of these, I assure you. So you asked, will this statement come true? I'll say yes. The clock is ticking with Bud Crawford. I think Arum needs to deliver one of those fights, or Crawford might start looking to pull a Canelo and emancipate himself. So I'll guess that we do get Crawford Spence or Crawford Pacquiao, Beatles or Poison, in the first half of 2020, assuming Crawford beats Brook this Saturday.
Yeah. I don't think I've been banging that Crawford Pacquiao drum years and years and years ago.
Right.
I don't think Manny Pacquiao wants that at this point. I just can't see what he
shouldn't want it.
Right.
So I don't know. They'd have to throw a whole lot of money at him, sort of a here's your parting gift. It's bigger than you were expecting. Please make this fight.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting co-feature to Crawford Brook, a rematch to a minor bubble upset from June. Joshua Franco narrowly outpointed Andrew Maloney in a very good fight, so they will do it again for a 115-pound belt on that ESPN broadcast. And there is one other card airing on Saturday on DAZN from London. Three women's title fights on one show, headlined by unified lightweight champ Katie Taylor versus Miriam Gutierrez. Any interest in this card, Kieran? And be aware that the boxing world will label you a misogynist, and rightly so, if you say no.
I always like watching Katie Taylor. And I was going to say that I'm super impressed that she's back in the ring so soon after that tough bout with Delphine Persson. Then I realized that time of late is a flat circle, and that was actually already 3 months ago. Like, how the hell did that happen? I don't know anything about Miriam Gutierrez other than that she's the mandatory. She's unbeaten against a number of unknown fighters and has never fought outside of Spain. I assume that Taylor is this favorite here. But it is great to see it top that triple header of women's fights. It's been a long time coming, but of late, it really does feel as if women's boxing now actually is developing some depth in quality as well. And as we've said before, I think a lot of that is surely opening up the Olympics to female boxers and just giving real incentives to amateur programs for women as for men. Like, good amateur backgrounds are really key to developing good pro careers. So it's great that they've been provided greater opportunities. Now pay them better and let them fight 3-minute rounds.
There you go.
All right. That will do it for another episode of Showtime Boxing with Raskin and Mulvaney. We will be back next week to recap Crawford Brook and cover everything else happening in the world of boxing. Until then, thanks for listening. Be safe, be kind, and be well.